We suffer largely because of the way we talk to ourselves. That's what the message of the Four Noble Truths is all about. It's not that we suffer from sight, sound, smells, taste, tactile sensations. We suffer because of the commentary we have on these things. And a lot of meditation is learning how to talk to yourself in new ways. In fact, the whole practice is about talking to yourself in new ways, asking new questions. And when you ask new questions, you get new answers. How do you create suffering for yourself? What are the steps? What are the steps in the way away from the suffering? What do you have to relearn? What old habits do you keep? What new habits do you have to develop? These are questions that are best asked when you're alone. Basically, you talk into yourself. The problem is that we don't always live alone. In fact, we very rarely have time alone now in the modern world. Our space is invaded, our minds are invaded. I mean, it's always been the case with every domestic culture. The people try to domesticate you so that you live nicely in the culture. And even in societies where they have rites of passage where people go out alone, they have very set ideas of what you're going to find when you go out alone. You're going to be looking for a totem animal or a spirit guide. And whatever message you gain, they'll have their ways of incorporating it back into regular society. This is one of the things that's radical about the Dharma, is there's a large part of it that's not domesticated. It's a wilderness Dharma. And the Buddha was able to straddle the wilderness and civilization. But it was his time in the wilderness that enabled him to get away from the questions of his civilization and see that they were the wrong questions. The hot topics of the time were, what are you? Do you have a self? Do you not have a self? What about the nature of the world? Is it eternal? Is it not eternal? Who made it? Did somebody make it? That kind of thing. And one of the things that drove his contemporaries crazy when the Buddha was teaching was that he wouldn't answer these questions. He had another set of questions entirely. It was by holding to that alternative set of questions that he was not sucked back into a society after his awakening. This is something you'll have to learn how to protect. This ability to be with yourself, even when you're with other people. And part of it's just that, realizing that a lot of people are asking the wrong questions and trying to get you involved in the wrong questions. And to the extent that you have to live with other people, work with other people, you do have to take on some of their questions. But you have to take them on with a sense of being disjoined from them. A Dharma practitioner is always something of an outsider. And learning how to practice both on your own and with other people means learning how to be comfortable with that role. It takes time and it takes determination. Because a lot of us don't like being outsiders. We want to fit in. I found this during my time in Thailand. We had a lot of work projects around the monastery. And John Fung was really good about not forcing me to get involved, but there were times when I had to. which meant that we had to work together on a project, talk about the project, and we could bond around the project itself. But he was always very careful to make sure that I didn't bond more than that. And of course, the fact that I came from a different culture meant that as I got to know some of the other people in areas outside of the project, whatever the project was, usually construction of some kind, I began to realize these were people I never would have connected with outside of that particular context. And I looked at some of their values in their daily life and told myself, I'm glad I don't have to get further involved with them. But in order to maintain that stance, as a comfortable outsider, you have to get comfortable inside your skin, comfortable with your practice. Otherwise, you feel that you are the only person making yourself miserable this way. You're cutting yourself off from others. There's that great passage in the canon where there's a monk meditating off in the forest, and his meditation is not going well. And here's the villagers off in the distance having a nighttime festival. And he's thinking thoughts about how miserable he is. They at least know how to make themselves happy. And Deva appears to him and says, do you realize how many people envy you right now? All those beings are going to go to hell. They see you going in an opposite direction. And the monk came to his senses, realized that what he was doing was really worthwhile. Now, we don't have devas coming to talk to us that way. But we do have to learn how to talk to ourselves in that way. This is one of the reasons why we have Dharma Talks online. Another reason is why we recommend chanting before you meditate. It helps get you out of the issues of daily life. So when you sit down to practice, you come with a different perspective. We have the chants on the different parts of the body to gain a sense of distance from the concerns of the body, the concerns of consuming. Reflections on aging, illness, and death, and the fact that our actions are our only possessions. Reflections of goodwill, compassion, empathetic joy, equanimity. To develop the right attitudes towards the people around us. In other words, we wish them well, but you realize often that wishing people well means that you have to go your separate ways. All of these reflections are there so you can create a mental space for your meditation, convinced of its importance. And being okay with the fact that it's somewhat cut off. Because when you look at the craziness of the world, you realize you really do want to be insulated from it. Now, some people say you're running away. But that's the whole point. Samsara tries to suck you in. And all too often we're too willing to be sucked in. We play along. And our lives get frittered away with things that are totally irrelevant. And so we have to take charge. This is one of the reasons it's so good that the meditation method we have here is one that is very proactive. It reminds you, you do have a large role in shaping your environment. And you want to take advantage of the fact that you do have that power, to at least some extent, to shape things. There's so many meditation methods that tell you don't do anything, just accept things as they are. Last night I was reading a little piece on the attitudes you should bring to mindfulness practice, and one of them is that nothing should be changed, nothing needs to be fixed. You have to be convinced that you're beautiful as you are. But after meditating that way for a long time, you begin to feel helpless. That you shouldn't be trying to fix anything, you shouldn't be trying to change anything. It's like those dogs in the learned helplessness experiment. First, they were placed in a room where no matter where they lay down on the floor, they were getting electric shocks. And after being that way for a while, then they were moved into another room where half the floor would still give them electric shocks and another half would not. And the researchers would drag them from one half to the other so they could see the difference, but the dogs had given up at that point. They were convinced there was nothing they could do to avoid the shocks. And there are a lot of meditation methods that are like that, convincing you there's nothing you can do, so you might as well accept that fact. But that wasn't the Buddha's approach. You look at his meditation instructions for breath meditation, and they're all about intentionally breathing in certain ways, to induce certain mental states and certain physical states, so you can be aware of the whole body with a sense of well-being throughout the whole body, calming the effect of the breath on the mind, calming your perceptions. These are things you can do. And so when you find yourself getting discouraged, or find yourself getting pulled into the questions of the world, remind yourself, what are the questions the Buddha would have you ask? Where is your suffering right now? What can you do to change what you're doing to create that suffering? Because it is something you are doing. The cause is something you're doing. The suffering itself is something you do. Why keep on doing it? It's not necessary. So try to find ways to remind yourself of the importance of this question and how you don't want your time frittered away. And as for the sense of feeling a little bit estranged, remind yourself that it is good to get away from crazy societies. Every domestic society is crazy in its own way. You're doing something that the noble ones would approve of. So keep them in mind. It's not that you're totally alone. There are other good people who are following this path. Back in the days of the Roman Empire, the Stoics had what they called the cosmopolis. Polis meant city. Cosmos, of course, meant cosmic, the cosmic city. And the idea being that this particular city was not determined by where you were. It was determined by what you respected. And if you respected reason, you were a member of their cosmopolis, wherever you were. In the same way, you respect the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. You respect your ability to find true happiness. That makes you part of the cosmopolis of the Buddha's Barisa. People who are following the Buddha, who are asking the questions that the Buddha asked, looking for the answers inside themselves. So as you repeat the chants at night, remember that people all around the world are repeating them. And there are some people actually practicing in line with the Buddha and the Dharma and the Sangha, taking refuge not only in the external Buddha and Dharma and Sangha, but also in the triple gem on the inner level, the qualities of the practice. Developing right mindfulness. Taking refuge in things that are unchanging, things that are free from conditions, which means that you want to learn how not to let yourself be overwhelmed by the conditions of having people around you. Learn to keep your internal conversation somewhat separate from the conversations outside, which means when you're working together, you talk about things that are necessary to talk about. But watch out for conversations that stray away from things that are really of genuine worth. You may become a person of few words, but what's wrong with that? As long as your few words are good words, it's a contribution to others. And part of your own training and gaining some control over your mind. So that question of where does the suffering come from? Well, it's coming from within. What can I do to put an end to it? Well, you're learning the skills. That's what matters. There's something undomesticated about those questions and those answers. And if it sets you apart, it sets you apart in a good way.